Hey everyone, welcome to Taking Stock. Really excited to welcome back Brandon Miller. Brandon was our first guest on this podcast. And with everything going on in the world right now, I could not think of a better person to chat with and learn from than Brandon. Brandon, if you recall, leads our diversity council here at Clarkston. And is driving a lot of change, not only within Clarkston, but within our clients. He is someone I truly respect and learn from every single time I have the opportunity to chat with him. We're going to talk about a lot of issues relating to what's going on in the world today. And I think you're going to really enjoy the opportunity once again to learn from Brandon. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk soon. Hey, Brandon, welcome back to Taking Stock.
How's it going, Steve? Excited to be back and to chat with you.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I was thinking about this, Brandon. Like, it feels like an eternity ago that you and I chatted. So you were my first ever guest on this podcast. And we talked about the topic of diversity and inclusiveness in the workplace. And it's amazing how much has changed. I think it's like, what, maybe like 6 months ago?
Yeah.
Maybe? 5-6 months ago. You know, so much has changed in, you know, the last 5 or 6 months, obviously everything having to do with COVID-19 and the global pandemic and all the impacts. And, but obviously this past couple of weeks have really, at least just in my eyes, and you and I've talked about this a lot, just the change that seems to be accelerating over the past couple of weeks has been, you know, really, really profound. But I wanted to bring you back and just chat. And if there's anything that I've learned over the past couple of weeks, probably the best thing that I could be doing as a white, privileged man is listen. And when I feel the need to listen, you're the person I want to go to. You're the person that I trust, and you're the person that I learn a ton from. So I'm not sure exactly where the conversation is going to go, but I just wanted to chat with you a little bit and learn and listen, and maybe just start off with kind of how you feeling, how are you doing right now?
Yeah, so that's always a trick question. I appreciate the question. And at the time that we're recording this podcast, I'm doing well. And what I tell people is, you know, depending on the day, depending on the hour, you know, as a Black man, as a Black employee in the workplace, you know, it changes and it shifts. And I got to the point where, you know, I owe it to myself and, you know, I owe it to those that I'm talking to kind of be honest with how I'm feeling. So, you know, sometimes we'll talk and I'll say, yep, it's a rough day. You know, I'm taking the day off. I got to move some meetings, and being okay with that. And, you know, some days I'm feeling empowered and, you know how passionate I am when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion. So, you know, there's at times that there's times where I feel kind of empowered and, you know, I feel like this is a time where, you know, these discussions and, voices, both voices of privilege coming from privilege, and then, you know, voices within kind of the Black community, communities of color. You know, it's important that everybody kind of, you know, talks and discusses and listens to these diverse perspectives. So, long way of saying it depends, but right now I'm doing well, and I'm glad we're talking about it.
You know, there are so many kind of thoughts that I have in kind of my mind. And one of them is, let me start with this one. You taught me a number of years ago about bias. And you have taught me that it's okay to realize that we all have some semblance of unconscious bias. And that's okay. And that was a big turning point for me. To realize that it's okay to at least acknowledge it initially and then go do something about it. I also am learning that it's okay for me to recognize that I'm privileged and to go do something about it, because I do have, through my life and opportunities, both personally and professionally, Life is easier for me in a lot of ways, whether it's my ability to accelerate my education, whether it's my ability to accelerate my career, whether it's my ability to walk comfortably down the street without perhaps some of the fears that you might have. So it's okay, right, for me to be privileged. But acknowledging the fact that I'm privileged is a good starting point. And now it's like, what do I go do about it, right?
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head too. So like when it comes to this topic, you know, I think it's so hard. And again, I can't empathize with this, but I feel like it's hard for those with privilege to just say, you know, I am a white man and I have privilege. Like that's uncomfortable to say out loud. And I would guess that those with privilege know, like inside, like, you know, this probably is a little bit easier for me, or these opportunities, I shouldn't say easier for me, but these opportunities are more present, or I have more access because of this privilege, but saying it out loud is uncomfortable. And, you know, what I tell people is change is catalyzed through discomfort. So it's when we're having these conversations and you feel comfortable saying that out loud, where we can really start to like get down to the nitty gritty and think about actions and what we can do to kind of move the needle forward. One of the emails that I've gotten over the last week that I like took a screenshot of and like saved, someone reached out and, you know, they expressed kind of, you know, that they're sorry, that they can't necessarily empathize with the situation, but that they're here for me. But within that email, there was one line that stood out, and it was, know that I am a kind of like tool in your toolkit. And if you need to use my voice, my whiteness, or my privilege as a tool to drive change, call on me to do that. And that was so powerful to me in the acknowledgement of privilege, but also the understanding that, you know, in this moment, we can leverage privilege as a tool to kind of move the needle forward and make change.
Yeah, I love that. I mentioned to you that my family and I, we went to a protest rally by our hometown yesterday. And one of the young speakers, you know, brought up the idea that, you know, weaponize your white privilege, use it and go take advantage of it. And that's certainly a sense of privilege, a sense of responsibility that I feel right now. But here's where I struggle, Brandon, because every time you and I talk, going back upon years, Bershelton, and right now, I feel like you're helping me. And that's broken. That's absolutely broken. One of the things that also was brought up yesterday, it's not the job of the oppressed to teach the oppressor. And yet I feel myself in this situation, we've caused the issue, we've caused the problems, we've exacerbated, you know, this institutional racism, you know, for centuries in a lot of different ways. And now here we are going to the people that we've oppressed through the years saying, help me understand how to deal with white privilege. Help me understand how to act. Isn't that broken? Or is that okay?
So, you know, from my perspective, you know, that your point is it's broken, and I completely agree. You know, asking and kind of thinking, and, you know, there's going to be anecdotes and stuff that I'm talking about that, you know, I'll just be vulnerable about some of my experiences in the workplace. But there's times where, you know, as a Black man in the workplace, you know, there's an emotional tax when it comes to thinking about, and we've talked about this, how do I like do what I can to manage other people's biases, or to make others feel comfortable, or make others feel like I'm not a threat because of unconscious bias, because of stereotypes, because of, you know, systemic racism or institutionalized racism. And, you know, that in itself is draining. And thinking about like the last week, having to take all of that in, and it forced me after, you know, the death of George Floyd, after the announcements, you know, in the media of companies condemning racism, it caused me to think about what are my experiences in society? What are my experiences in the workplace where I've seen this or I've kind of felt this? So I'm dealing with those emotions. And then at the same time, I'm getting these questions of, all right, well, what can I read to understand this more? Or what can I watch? Or is there any shows on Netflix that I should tune into? Or what should I be doing? And the frustration that I feel from that, and I understand it's intent versus impact. Like, I know the intent is coming from a good place, but mm-hmm. from the impact end, it's, this is the same conversation that we've been having for decades, that we've mm-hmm. been having for centuries. There's countless books, there's countless movies, there's education, there's resources at your disposal. And again, I'm still having to kind of consolidate a list and help provide answers that have been discussed for decades. And I think that's where the frustration comes in that statement. So there's plenty of tools. There's plenty of, you know, ways to educate and get smart on solutions. And the one thing that I will add to, I think of everything in consulting terms, I guess now. And, you know, you think about like a RACI model. So responsible. Mm-hmm. Who's responsible, who's accountable, who's consulted, who's informed. I have no problem as a Black man being consulted. You know, you can come to me, you know, if you have a solution that you need consulting on or you need, you know, feedback on, or I'm okay with being informed. But having that oppressed party be responsible and accountable, to me, you know, that's not just in itself. So that's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah, that's really well said. And I left... I was having a conversation with one of my boys last night, and we were talking about, in a single word, kind of capture how you felt participating yesterday. And for me, it was responsibility. Mm-hmm. I feel as if I have a responsibility that I need to, you know, to bring up your RACI, and I want to hold myself accountable against what I'm going to define myself to be responsible for. Both in my personal life, you know, and in my professional life, you know, how we kind of manage and govern within Clarkston, but also the change that we're trying to drive, you know, within the industries that we serve. Before we get into that stuff, because I'm curious to hear some of your perspective there, why does this feel a little bit different? Why is it, is it just the kind of awful brutality that we all saw, you know, kind of seeing kind of murder on video in a way that we did? Is it we've just reached our tipping point? Is it there's just so much pent up, like we're just ripe for change and we've just hit that point? Am I right to say that this time feels a little bit different? And if you agree with that, does that make you kind of more optimistic that, you know, hopefully some more impactful change would be on the horizon?
Yeah. This is a conversation that I have with my friends pretty regularly now, that it does feel different. And it's kind of, you know, a mixed reaction to it. You know, George Floyd isn't the first time that we've seen police brutality on video, or that we've mm-hmm. seen these things on video. What's different, though, is this is the first time where the entire country has been on sort of a pause due to COVID and the pandemic, right? So everybody's at home. Everybody is over-indexing on how much, you know, TV they're watching and social media they're scrolling and news they're consuming. There's no sports. There's no concerts. Like, everybody is kind of in this place of stillness where now you can ignore the video. Now you can ignore the news coverage on it. I know for me, like in previous situations like this, it would be like, okay, after work, I'm internalizing all of this. I'm thinking about this. And then I go to an office building and I'm kind of like secluded from it. Now it's kind of like in real time. And I guess that's one positive. I hate to say there's a positive that came out of the pandemic, but the positive is that everybody's in this place of stillness, and we can't ignore it. And because of that, I'm seeing kind of allyship and advocacy, kind of in solidarity of, you know, people outside of the Black community coming together. And I think that that's what's causing the tipping point, and that that solidarity in itself is what really makes us feel different. And I'm more hopeful about the outcomes after this.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's scary to think that we needed a global pandemic for us to open up our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's going to be one positive that comes out of this, you know, great.
Yeah.
Great. I want to, something you said earlier just kind of sparked this, and I guess you're always kind of open and honest and vulnerable in conversations that we have. Is there any, you mentioned kind of conversations that you have, and kind of in your own mind, is there any, when you've got people like me and others and executives pledging to, you know, targets, pledging $10 million to civil rights organizations, and, you know, Doug McMillon, the CEO of Walmart, is kind of forming this business roundtable with, you know, all business leaders. And is there a little bit of, really, where the hell have you been for the past decades, centuries? And like, oh, now you want to fix the problem? Is there a little bit of like, where the hell have you been? Or is it, do you need to just sweep that under the rug and say, I'm going to forget about all of my pent up frustration that this has been going on and welcome people who want to come in and help?
That's a good question. And I'll be honest in my initial reaction. So I think it was, you know, the weekend or the Monday after the death of George Floyd. So whenever, you know, there was a lot of public and company commitment to racial justice, denouncing racism, my first thought was, where did all of this money come from? Like, it's to me, it's like, so you've had the money,
right?
We're talking about the conversation, but now that like we're all kind of making these solidarity statements together, that we're committing the money. So that was like my first piece of frustration. But on the flip side, I'm happy that these organizations that I know are making change and are doing the work are getting the funding that they need to continue to do the work. So that's the positive. But first reaction was, oh, now we have all this money. The second reaction, and I'm sure that we'll dive deeper into this, is, and I'm putting my Black man in corporate America hat on, is I know, and there's been reports, there's been studies that have shown some of the injustices or inequities within corporate America when it comes to people of color, specifically the Black community as well. And the initial frustration, and this is a conversation that I have with a lot of my Black friends that are in corporate America, is, we are now denouncing racism. We are promoting equity and equality, and we are 100% for that. Why are there these gaps still, or what on the surface seems to be that you didn't take or you don't take equity as seriously internally? And I think that's the conversation now in corporate America that we need to start having with companies is, all right, now that you've made this public declaration of the importance of equity, we need to make sure that we're doing that under your purview and your sphere of influence, which is your company as well. And I think this is kind of that pivotal point where I'm not necessarily, I know people that are upset about historical kind of occurrences or entities, but now my focus is on, you've made this statement, I'm going to hold you accountable to that now. So what is your path moving forward? And if we don't see progress, what does that mean and what happens next?
Yeah. No, go ahead. Sorry, finish your point.
No. That was it.
I think, like, to me, it's like, how do you hold ourselves as organizational, you know, executives and leaders within business? You know, it's very easy to do something right now. Mm-hmm. It is very easy. Even beyond just the marketing statement or updating your Instagram, you know, corporate feed, and, you know, there's different, and then donating the money, it's wonderful to do right now. But how do we ensure that it's sustainable change and that we're holding ourselves accountable over time? Because one of the things that is really an issue is that things that are burning platforms in the news will quickly change, mm-hmm. very, very quickly change. How do we maintain this level of focus? How do we maintain this level of accountability, both, you know, just culturally and socially in the discussion and the discourse that we're having? But I think to our point here within organizations, how do we ensure that, you know, some of those kind of injustices are taking, you know, place? I mean, one of the things that I have never had a Black manager mm-hmm. in my 26 years of working. That's something I was thinking about, because I mentioned, you know, one of the students yesterday, you know, stated that they've never had a Black teacher in their 12 years of, you know, going through a school system. I've never had a Black manager. The ability for me in a professional sense to be able to interact with, you know, other, you know, Black, you know, employees internally or clients externally is extremely limited. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. You know, how do we get after these in a more sustainable way? So I guess if I frame that into a question, what thoughts do you have in terms of how do we take these? Again, I'm not deflecting, I'm trying to push the problem on you, but do you believe that organizations will put the processes and reviews in place to ensure that they're holding themselves accountable to what they're stating right now?
The answer is they need to. Yeah. Will they? I guess that's to be seen. And couple of thoughts on this, and feel free to interrupt if you want to kind of dive into one as I'm rambling. But when it comes to kind of making change, when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, kind of internally, I see it as there's kind of three buckets or steps or things that need to happen, right? There needs to be awareness first. Like we need to be aware of what the problems and what the opportunities are. And it, a lot of times that's uncomfortable to say, you know, we have no Black, you know, managers or executive leaderships or whatever that statement would be for a company. You know, we you gotta be aware of what the issue is. Mm-hmm. You need to act, and you need to come up with, you know, what are our action plans to improve this? And within that action plan, you have to have like those measurable goals at different time horizons. So what does success look like in a year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, you know, whatever those milestones are. And a lot of companies have that awareness piece, probably fewer, but still quite a few companies have that action piece. Like we see the actions that companies are taking, but what's lacking is the accountability piece.
Let me challenge one thing. So I agree that a lot of companies have the awareness piece, mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say that they're so quick to state it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's almost some way, you know, it's this 300-pound gorilla that might be in the room that people are just not open to talking about. They're just uncomfortable sharing mm-hmm. Or stating the fact that, hey, we have never had, you know, an African-American executive in our organization, or 3% of our corporate executive team is African-American, things like that. You know, we might be aware of it, but stating it and being open and honest and identifying the problem, like we talked about earlier around bias or privilege. Mm-hmm. So I think there's awareness, but I think stating what you're aware of is something that
that's a whole different ballgame. Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. So there's that awareness piece, and it might be awareness in a closed door meeting with 12 executives around the table, you know, mm-hmm. that goes to where, but to your point, there's also a kind of acknowledgement piece of that awareness, and that's making it public and making it known, kind of as that starting point. And mm-hmm. probably, I would say that that is rare, to your point. So yeah, you got the awareness, we got the action, and then the accountability piece. And where I see some gaps in accountability is, you know, it's hard to hold a company accountable for something if there's not an accountable person or party or department. And a lot of times these DE&I initiatives will fall onto a volunteer position or a, you know, companies will have chief diversity officers or diversity leads that don't have like a budget or anything associated with that. So it's hard to hold yourself accountable to these goals if you don't have an accountable person with kind of a budget and kind of the ability to lead and drive change in that space. So yeah, I would break it kind of into those three things. And, you know, the data is out there. If we're speaking kind of on a kind of holistic level, like I think only four CEOs out of the Fortune 500 are Black. I think it's like 3.2% of senior leaders in the Fortune 500 are Black. Studies, I think it's the CTI. I can't remember what that acronym stands for, Talent Institute. But you know, they did a study where it shows that 65% of Black employees feel that they have to work harder to advance in their career compared to 16% of white employees that feel like they have to work harder to advance in their career. So like the data is there, whether you want to acknowledge it or, you know, publicly state, you know, this is where we're at on a holistic level. I think the data is there, but it's, again, that awareness, action, and accountability that's integral into driving change.
And I think, you know, around the action piece, I think we're not going to fix this tomorrow.
Yeah.
But the steps that we put in place tomorrow will ensure that we're not having these same conversations in 5 or 10 years. And you need to, like anything, you need to be willing to take those small steps. Mm-hmm. And that could impact the way that you kind of just every facet of how you run your organization. If you look at it, like you said, holistically, like you can't solve this tomorrow. But the steps that you put in place tomorrow are going to ensure success in the long term. And putting together that action plan with measurable goals, and like you said, you know, 1 year out, 3 year out, 5 year out, you need to not be embarrassed or ashamed of what you might achieve in 1 year, because it's not going to be where you need to be in the long term. But you need to put those steps in place. And I think that's part of the challenge that organizations feel, is that they're looking for a quick fix. And it's not there. It's not a quick fix. That this is hundreds of years of that we're trying to fix and trying to get after. You need to put those short-term measurable goals in place.
No, I agree. And I saw something on LinkedIn too. It was a few like D&I trainers that I know were basically posting on LinkedIn, like, I am overbooked. Like, I can't take on any more clients right now. And this is just over the span of, you know, 5 days. But, you know, this isn't something that you can train your way out of. Like, training is a piece of the puzzle, but you can't train your way out of it, and you can't hire your way out of it. You know, there's been diversity recruiting efforts to increase diversity in these companies. And I think the tech industry is probably the most visible example, where companies are spending millions of dollars on diversity recruiting, but because of their culture and a lack of inclusion and a lack of equity within processes within the company, they're not retaining diverse talent. So this is, you know, when it comes to actions, you know, you have to think about, okay, yes, there's training, there's unconscious bias training, there's anti-racism training, cultural intelligence training, these types of things. But you also have to take a look at payment equity, and looking at like ensuring that you're paying over the living wage for your employees. There's things that you can do when it comes to healthcare policies and inclusive benefits when we're thinking about things like parental leave policies and things like that. We hit on kind of equity and representation at all levels of the company. So don't aggregate, you know, all of your employees and, you know, highlight that as your diversity number if, you know, you don't have diversity at every level. Thinking about like new hire or entry level to managers to executives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's a lot of creative things that companies should start considering if they haven't. And, you know, things like kind of civic engagement. And do you allow your employees to treat like election day as like a holiday or have hours that they can participate in primaries and things like that? And that's getting more into how you as a company can start to drive societal and external change as well. So there's a lot of different aspects of action. And it's not just training and it's not just recruiting.
Yeah, I truly hope, and I will be optimistic in my hope that this is not viewed as a check the box mentality. Mm-hmm. That organizations are not thinking like, okay, we're going to put you know, our organization, you know, through some sort of D&I training, and we're going to feel good about ourselves. We've checked that box. We could communicate that to our shareholders. We could communicate that to our customers, and let's move on.
Yeah.
There's so many other elements to it. And you listed, you know, a bunch of them. And that's why that accountability piece is the final step is so important. And that's the wonderful thing about consumers and kind of to circle back to where we started, especially with the younger generation. If there's one thing that, you know, I think we've seen is that there is a level of younger consumers are keeping a level of accountability. They are driving change within organizations because their voice is increasingly powerful. Mm-hmm. And my hope is that continues. And my hope is that there is an accountability that executives feel in leading their organizations, to their employees, to their consumers. And that ultimately is what's going to drive these change and that those consumers and their employees feel empowered to hold these organizations accountable.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's exactly what we're going to see. You hit the nail on the head is that what I would say to corporations and companies now is that there's a level of solidarity within your employees themselves coming together to with plans to hold companies accountable for actions and for driving change. So the more that we're aware of what that landscape looks like internally should help kind of bubble up to the top and ensure accountability at the highest levels of any company.
Yeah. Thanks, Brandon. As always, we learned a ton from you, and you've forced me to kind of rethink a lot of different things. And I'm going to take that responsibility. I'm not going to take it lightly, and I'm going to challenge, you know, my peers and try to drive this message. Again, like I've said, both internally within Clarkston, but externally within the industries that we serve and with our clients, and also, you know, within my community as well, within my family, within my community, as much as we could do it. You know, this is something that that's owned by all of us, and we all need to be a part of, you know, fixing this problem. So yeah. I appreciate you. I appreciate, you know, your guidance and your perspective as always. I know, you know, everyone listening does as well. So thank you for taking the time.
No, I appreciate the time, and I appreciate the platform for the discussion because it's important. And above all, it's important, but it's essential at the same time. So I appreciate the conversation and the platform.
All right. Thanks, Brandon. Stay safe. Okay.
All right. Take it easy.
All right, see ya. Bye. So thank you, everyone, for listening again to my discussion with Brandon. We hit upon a lot of topics, and I'll tell you what, it's not easy for me to talk about a lot of these issues. I mentioned the word responsibility. I mentioned, you know, the idea of white privilege and how that permeates, you know, all aspects of society and the workplace. So we got to get after it, guys. We absolutely do. There are problems that we need to acknowledge. We need to be aware of them. We need to put actions in place, and we need to hold ourselves accountable. I want to continue to talk about these topics. I don't want to hide behind the excuse of, you know, these aren't work-related topics. They are. They impact everything about kind of who we are as people, as employees, as organizations, as industries. And we need to drive change, and we need to hold ourselves accountable. So look forward to more discussions like this. We'll still talk about a lot of the issues that relate to business process and driving change in organizations and all that fun stuff. But I also want to make sure we're holding ourselves accountable to have some of the tougher discussions as well. Thanks all. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll talk soon. Thank you.